everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck. Along with my coworker, Jordan Bianchi, we are writers for The Athletic. And while I'm at home here watching all this stuff on TV, Jordan is living the high life at Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas, where he's just covered his first F1 race. Jordan, how are things there?
It was fun. It was great to be here. It was an experience. My first ever experience, as you said, at an F1 race. It was quite the, it's kind of a cliche term, but quite the culture shock a little bit. Very different than what I've covered before. And I enjoyed it immensely. It was a great weekend. It was fun to be here. And this felt like an event. We talk about a lot of racing, how racing should be events on this podcast before. This felt special. This felt huge. And it's hard to replicate, you know. Now there's been a lot of talk this weekend about what some series do, what series don't, but what the formula, whatever they did here this weekend, it worked because this felt giant.
Well, I mean, certainly from afar looking on TV and stuff, the crowd was just unbelievable. Even on the Saturday crowd, I mean, they've gotten big Saturday crowds before, but like the year I was there, I think 2018, they had a big Saturday crowd because it was part of the ticket, but most of those people sort of came later just for the concert. You saw people streaming into the track after qualifying was over and stuff. They just want to see Justin Timberlake the year I was there. But you could tell like Saturday at COTA, like it was lit. They weren't just like there to see Billy Joel. I mean, it was massive attendance. And then Sunday, the crowd today was just every angle they showed on TV, there's people crammed everywhere. Just unbelievable. What a scene.
It was a scene. And you talk about Saturday, and it was about 120,000 people is the number that I was told. And I think that's been reported elsewhere. And it just felt seismic. And you talk about qualifying, and we had that great qualifying session where Perez and Hamilton and Verstappen just all laid down these monster laps, boom, boom, boom. And the crowd response when that happened, you could hear it inside the media center. I mean, you could hear it on TV, you know, and it was incredible. And it was great to see. It's fun to be in an event where the support is just, you know, bubbling everywhere.
I mean, you know, when you take into consideration of everything that's happening there, and you listen to the drivers even, and the commentators on Sky Sports, and just everybody. So it didn't feel just like, oh, this is what we get every weekend. This is our normal F1 race. You know, like they felt like this was special as well.
They did. And that's a really good point, because I was kind of wondering that too. And, you know, I've never been to a Formula One race before. So, and I didn't know. And I kind of had this idea in my head, like this was kind of the norm for Formula One. So I asked some people behind the scenes that have traveled with the series or, you know, with the teams and that kind of thing. And they're all like, no, this is not the norm. This is kind of the exception. There are some races on the schedule that are huge like this, and it feels like a big deal, but quite a few people told me the same thing. Like, you show up at some of these other Formula One races, it's like they almost forgot they were having a race, and they just like, oh, we got to have a race today. And they kind of like, it's helter skelter, throw it together kind of thing. It's not this giant, you know, people streaming in mass, kind of wanting to be here in this energy that was permeating throughout, you know, COTA this weekend. So no, this is the exception and not the norm in Formula One.
Well, ultimately you may have been at what is perhaps the largest sporting event in America since the pandemic. I mean, all told, I mean, this crowd was, you know, certainly bigger than any NASCAR crowd this year. I think they said 140,000 today, 400,000 for the weekend. And I think based on the limitations for the Indy 500 this year, it may have been bigger than Indy 500 as well. So, and that's what they had been saying. Indy 500 was the biggest sporting event so far in America, since the pandemic. I don't know about the world overall, but, certainly it seemed like that. Now, I guess the question is, you know, where does F1 go from here? Certainly this was a big stamp of, okay, like, you know, this is a giant way forward. Like, this proves that the Netflix show has been working, as you've talked about, you wrote about, on The Athletic this week. Now they're talking about, you know, there's going to be two races next year. People's talking about three races in the United States in a couple years, and the drivers seem to embrace it. Can there be too much, or is it just F1's growth right now is on that trajectory? trajectory, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And that's the question everyone's asking is, what is the limit? You know, a couple of limits. One, what is the limit with the Formula One schedule? It's at 22 races right now. It's going to go to 23 next year, I believe, with Miami coming on. And, you know, what's the threshold for that? And then and then the other point is, what is the number of races here in the United States? I mean, this is a giant country. There isn't a West Coast Formula One race. So if that race in Las Vegas happens, which most people think it's going to be added to the 2023 schedule, that would kind of, you know, fill that need. So that seems like a good number. It seems like that's kind of the number that, when I was talking to some people for a story that, you know, I reported on, you know, last week, is that three is kind of the ceiling and you can't go above that. We'll see, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Miami. And I know there's a lot of excitement about Miami. And listen, I think it's a great market for Formula One, but there's a couple things that have to be acknowledged. One, it's Miami area. It's not like South Beach. It's not downtown Miami. It's not on the waterfront like they'd wanted. It's kind of in the suburbs. So there's some questions about the staying power of that race and whether, yes, they have a 10-year contract, but you know how these contracts are, Jeff. You know, whether that race is going to be, what that race is going to be like in year three, year four, and whether it can have the staying power to be, you know, relevant. I think Vegas, if and when that does happen, I think that's going to be huge. I think that's a great market. I think it's a great event. I think that could be everything that Formula One wants it to be. Obviously, a lot depends too on what that circuit looks like and everything. But I think the future for Formula One is really, really bright. I don't want to see, and it's important not to see an overexpansion and just a flood of races and kind of lose that uniqueness, but a handful, 2-3 races a year in this market, along with one in Mexico City, along with in Montreal, that feels right.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, you know, it's, I think that if you get into too many street circuits and not like, I mean, what makes COTA special in a way is it's a great track for Formula One racing. It's purpose built.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just something that's assembled hastily and, you know, thrown together and they, you know, it's city streets or whatever, and you know they have to do this and this to it. I mean, the drivers love this track, and it puts on a great race. I mean, today this was a really, really good race. I mean, if you, I bet there was a decent amount of people, Americans, today who watched their first F1 race, maybe, right, or gave it a shot. And I mean, for me, that was a great Formula One race. I mean, but for what, you know, it wasn't the crazy kind of epic, like, wow, I can't believe that just happened, but it was a straightforward race where, you know, it was a great start. Lewis gets the start, you know, he's got the lead. And then Red Bull says, okay, how are we going to do this strategy wise? And then you had a great strategy play out. And both, you know, Max and Lewis, you know, they were driving fantastic. I mean, it to me, that's what I want out of a Formula One race, you know?
I got everything I wanted. I thought it was really exciting. You saw Hamilton at the end there, comes out, has got about an 8.5 second deficit to Verstappen, knocks that down to just about a second. And it looks like he's going to catch him and doesn't. But like you said, it's everybody pushing hard. You can tell, you can see it. You can see what the drivers are doing. The strategy element I thought was really exciting. And I thought you had good racing as Verstappen is trying to work his way through traffic, as Hamilton is trying to cut down that lead. This was a very good Formula One race. And I know there's going to be some people who say, well, there wasn't a lot of passing. And then you know, the lead changes were all, you know, happened because of pit stops. Okay. But again, this is Formula One. This is a different type of racing. I think if you look at it for what this is, I thought this was a really, really good race. And I think even a casual fan just tuning in today can appreciate that was two teams basically throwing haymakers at each other and they went toe to toe. And you saw that.
And I mean, it's been like that all year. And I mean, it was like that in qualifying. It was like that, you know, in the practice sessions this weekend. I mean, and really at the start of the race was sort of breathtaking there where, you know, Max has the pole and Lewis gets a slightly better jump. And Max is basically like, I'm going to drive you all the way off the track, it seemed like. And
then
Lewis equally was just like, I'm going in there and I'm not lifting. And Max had to go real wide and, you know, as the commentators pointed out, it would, if it had been anybody else but his teammate Sergio Perez, he would have lost second place right there. But Perez kind of cut him a break and let them battle it out. But yeah, I mean, this is for F1, I mean, this is quite the title battle. I mean, every week we talk about it. Oh, has it gone this way? But this was a really, really big statement from Red Bull to come into what has been a Mercedes track and really sort of throw a punch there that you thought you would have thought, hey, Lewis, this is going to be a Lewis win and maybe he'll retake the points lead. And but then you get to some more sort of Red Bullish type tracks in the final five races. But now, I mean, he extends his lead. I think he's up by 10 points. And maybe this was really the true turning point where it's like, okay, maybe now Red Bull is going to be able to get away with it. What do you think?
I think that's the case. And I'm going to write about that for The Athletic, is that this kind of felt like a changing of the guard in some respects. I mean, you've got Lewis Hamilton, who's the four-time defending world champion. You've got Mercedes, who's had a stranglehold on the manufacturers and drivers championships for the last 7 years. And today, Red Bull had every answer to Mercedes, everything that Mercedes threw at them. And Max kept his cool on the racetrack. Lap one could have been a disaster. It wasn't. He didn't panic. He composed himself, got off track a little bit, but fell in line, worked his way. Red Bull got a plan on how to operate strategy. It's just everything that Mercedes had, Red Bull had an answer to. And going back to the beginning of the weekend, in first practice, you know, Verstappen was what, eighth, I think, on the board. And it looked like, well, wait, this is not good. This is not a good start to the weekend on a track where they were not expected to have speed. And they just kept working at it. Christian Horner after the race said this was a total team victory, from what Max in the car did, from what the team did, to figuring out where to get more speed. This was everything they wanted, while Mercedes, they came out, they left everything on the table. But between Hamilton not being able to run down Verstappen late, and then Bottas having an engine issue and having to make a change. And it just, it feels like this is swinging in Red Bull's favor right now.
So Jordan, this weekend swung in your favor personally, because, you know, as we documented last time, it was all in doubt. You didn't even know if you're going to have a hotel and, you were able to find a place an hour away from the track and you got to cover your first F1 race. I mean, what year did you start following F1? I mean, you've been a lifelong.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I was a kid. I used to follow F1 even before growing up. I mean, before they even have a race in this country, I was, after I'd left for a while. So
I want to mine that a little bit. I mean, I'm just curious. I bet a lot of our listeners haven't been.
Sure.
I've only been to one. What was your impression? You know, you watch F1 all the time. You finally go to this race. What were some of the differences of being at a NASCAR race that you're there all the time and going to an F1 race?
Everything was different in a lot of respects. I'm still trying to figure out the difference between a paddock and a garage. If you could help me with that. Like, I kept wanting to say garage, but I'm like, well, I think I have to say paddock. We need like a dictionary guide or something like that. That screws me up every time.
yeah, for sure.
It was just everything. I mean, just, how the media is accommodated, you know, different media sessions that we do, access to drivers, access to team people. I was able to, every team principal, basically the people who run the team or own the teams, was made available to the media. That is something in NASCAR that, let's be honest, we don't have on a regular basis, but they do this every single week where every team principal is touted, brought out. And they're allowed, everybody's allowed to ask questions, which is crazy to think about. But you think that's actually great for us because it gives us things to talk about. It allows us opportunity to flush out stories. You know, in NASCAR, I mean, how many times do we go without talking to an owner? Now, we have individual one-on-one interviews set up occasionally, but really, unless they're announcing something or they win a race, we don't really get that opportunity to talk to them. That, to me, jumped out. Just the atmosphere here. It was part race, part concert, part festival, just part wanting to be here, part scene. The number of celebrities here that wanted to be here but weren't here because they were promoting a movie or a TV show, or they were paid to be here. They were here because they wanted to be here. Now, I completely own the fact that I completely misidentified Megan Thee Stallion, and I thought it was Cardi B, which I completely own because I'm an idiot. But it was just it's just seeing like that and having celebrities walk around here. Why? Because they want to be here and just kind of being fans. And you don't always see that at some other races we've covered.
Yeah, no, I think those are a lot of good points there. And it's just fascinating to me how F1 has become just sort of like, I mean, okay, Serena Williams is going to be there. Ben Stiller is going to be there. Shaq, Megan Thee Stallion. Whoever, there's plenty of people walking around. And you're just like, man, like you said, I mean, you know, they even asked Ben Stiller on the telecast, oh, you know, is there any, you know, what's going on in your life? You know, I think they were sort of prompting him to,
yeah,
you know, give a chance to plug something, plug a project or movie. He's like, no, I'm just here with my son. We just, we're fans, you know? Chris Bosch was saying, oh, you know, I've been a fan since before Lewis Hamilton was even, you know, racing in F1. And it's become a place where everybody wants to go. And, you know, one of those celebrity things where it's like cool to go and cool to be seen there. F1 has really marketed itself that way. And, you know, obviously it helps that there's only one race per year in this country.
Absolutely.
You know, for sure. And this is the one chance that if somebody's going to go, whether it's a fan or a celebrity or whoever, but the fact that it's booming the way it is, I mean, that really says a lot. And especially, you know, you hate to say it, but, you know, for it to sort of completely overshadow NASCAR in a lot of ways. I mean, I think the contrast between what was going on at Kansas this weekend and Austin was glaring. And, you know, you would assume NASCAR is very sensitive to that. Like, man, what's going on? Like, what do we got to do here? Because, I mean, they're showing the shots of the grandstands at Kansas, and it was not good. You know, it was, I mean, I don't know how many people were there, 30, 40,000, something like that. And like they said, you know, they announced 140,000 in Austin. I mean, this is a playoff race for NASCAR. This is, you know, the semifinal round. This is supposed to be, hey, and it's just like Texas last week. I mean, apparently, you know, Jenna Fryer of the Associated Press tweeted that a topic of conversation in the pre-race driver bullpen for NASCAR was, where were all the fans of Texas? What can be done about this? And they expressed that to Steve Phelps, like, something's got to be done. This is not acceptable. But I don't know what NASCAR does at this point, but it's got to be, this wasn't a good look, I think, for NASCAR this weekend, because they've been the king of this country, and to have F1 come in, and F1's come in with big crowds before, but to have this much interest and buzz.
Yeah, the buzz and the, for lack of a better term, sex appeal, you know, like that to me is the thing. And I think it's a huge thing. And I think the fact that NASCAR has opened the door that this can even happen, where you could have F1 come in here. Like you said, you're always going to have people kind of going to these races because it's a one-off thing. But the buzz, the excitement, you can't, that is not something that you can just create by your out of thin air. It's something that kind of has to almost organically. I don't know what NASCAR does. I don't know the answer to that question, because I thought a lot about that this weekend as I was at the racetrack, and I was thinking about, okay, mostly covering, you know, 99% of what I do is NASCAR related. So it's hard not to compare and contrast. And I don't know what you can do. I don't know what NASCAR could have done going into the Kansas race weekend to have that kind of excitement where people are just itching, like just bursting at the seams, like wanting to be there, wanting to, you know, watch. And because it's Kansas and it's not, I don't know, it's just, it's not the most exciting race. And I don't know if there's, I don't know. There's probably a laundry list of reasons why this happened. There is a laundry list of reasons why this happened, but to fix this, that's a complicated question. I don't think there's one thing.
Well, I mean, devil's advocate, you say, you know, it's Kansas. It's, you know, it's not going to be that thrilling of a race, but, you know, F1 generally doesn't have like the sort of quality of, you know, the number of passes or side-by-side racing, you could argue, you know what I mean? Like many of F1 races are just pretty much straightforward and played out. But I mean, obviously people respond to that. I think, you know, I would have say that, okay, to build the buzz for Kansas, NASCAR made that decision years ago. They said, we're going to implement playoffs. And they said, we're going to implement elimination style playoffs. And it's going to be exciting. And we're doing this because we want to create a buzz during NFL season. We want to generate interest and get more people than are coming right now. You know, we want to go toe to toe with the NFL at one point. That was the goal. Now it's just sort of hang on and all that stuff. But I mean, even the rules package, you know, this was the final of this car on a mile and a half track today. You know, that rules package was created in part to, hey, let's keep the cars closer together. It'll be exciting. But, you know, you look at the stands this week, last week, and you're like, where is the response to that? Where is that, you know, how is that manifesting itself? I think you go a lot of weeks and you just sort of, you know, say, well, it's just sort of the state of NASCAR. But I think when it's sort of so in your face, like with F1 and NASCAR at the exact same time, the exact same day, and you're like, whoa, that's a crowd. That's as, you know, a major, major event. And another auto racing series was able to pull that off. I mean, if you're NASCAR and you're not, you know, doing some head scratching and soul searching and saying, whoa, like this needs to be sort of a wake up call. Maybe it's too late to sort of do anything, but
yeah,
you know, F1 is here and growing and on a trajectory, and NASCAR has now got a challenge on its hands. Not that they go head to head, but I think, you know, I'll give you an anecdotal example real quick, right? My parents have friends who started watching, you know, they heard that my parents' son is a motor sports writer, and they said, oh, we love motorsports. And they said, oh yeah, he covers a lot of NASCAR. And they said, oh, NASCAR, no, we don't know about that, but we watch F1 because of Drive to Survive, like you've, you know, written about and stuff. And it's like, okay, that's a whole segment of people in this country who are starting to go toward motorsports, and they're not even sort of considering NASCAR. They're, you know, I think a lot of NASCAR fans get into it and then they sort of veer toward F1 or something, like, oh, I'll check this out too, or something like that. But this is like, now they're going toward F1 and they're just going around NASCAR. That's what I think is alarming if you're NASCAR.
I agree with everything you said there. And I've had other examples too, where I've had conversations with people and they're not racing fans per se, but they are Formula One fans because of the drama or the characters and the people they see on TV. And while this is, we say this is a one-off and that this is COTA and, you know, Formula One comes here once a year, but go back to what we just talked about though, a little bit ago, next year, Formula One is here twice a year. And that Miami race is going head to head with Darlington in the spring. And that's, you know, that raises an eyebrow. And if Vegas gets added to the schedule in 2023, when is that race going to be added, you know, to the schedule? Because I'll say this to you. If that race is in the spring, well, guess what? NASCAR is racing in Vegas in the spring. So there's a chance where those two series could be in the same town, very close together. Or if it's in the fall, it's the same thing. So,
well, that just happened with Dallas and Austin, essentially. I mean, yeah. I know they're about, what, 3 hours apart, maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, back-to-back weeks. And there was a time when F1 was on the exact same day as Texas Motor Speedway. There was a few years that was like that in Austin. But, you know, still, you see the difference in, you know, you're just like, man,
Hamlin, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something to watch, a trend going forward. I don't know where it goes from here, but this was a big, I don't know. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, I think his quote was afterwards something like, you know, this is definitely, you know, we've arrived type thing in this country. So,
it is. And it's not I think NASCAR has done a fantastic job of remaking its schedule. I've said this countless times. I wrote about it, you know, with the road courses and getting rid of some of the races that are just redundant, Dover, Pocono, Kentucky, you know, just those kind of things. We've talked about it, but even then, you still look at some of these races on the schedule and you're like, really? Do I want to take my family there? Or do I want to have like a guy's weekend and go check that out? You know, no, but Formula One's racing in Austin, or Formula One's racing in Miami or in Vegas. And that could be fun and exciting. Now I know, you know, NASCAR races in both South Florida and Vegas, but again, do you want to see a race on Las Vegas Motor Speedway, or do you want to see something on the strip? I mean, we know the answer to that, because look at the podcast, look at the poll number for the most recent Las Vegas race.
Yeah. Well, I guess I should make sure, is there anything else you want to touch on about your F1 experience, anything like that, along those lines? You know, yeah. I'm sure there'll be more that you're writing coming up.
It was a great experience. Happy to be here. It was fun. It was great to see it. And hopefully get to be back next year. I think you are probably Miami bound though.
Hey, well, I don't know about that. We'll see.
I'll be in Darlington. See. You'll be in Miami.
We'll see if the hotels burn down or whatever the situation is in the future.
Yeah. That was a tough situation, but no one wants to hear me gripe about my accommodation. So that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, geez, you still got to go to Formula One.
I'm not complaining. Not complaining.
So, listen, NASCAR, from what I could tell, you at least got to watch the last 80 laps, most of the final stage. I was able to watch, obviously, the full thing. It had two screens going. You know, ultimately, if you look at it, I mean, it wasn't quite how it turned out in the sense that, or I thought it would turn out in the sense that I kept saying over and over again on this podcast, Kyle Larson is going to win one of the 550 races in round three, and Chase Elliott is going to win the other one. Larson did win one, and I thought for a minute there, I thought, oh, there's Chase's turn. But Larson is just too good. Win number nine on the season, and he gets the record 1 week after I talked about it, like as a possibility for like later before the season wraps up. He immediately goes out and smashes the all-time laps led record for a 36 race season. Another 130 laps led today at a mile and a half track, just throws that up there, you know. Man, what a season. I mean, three wins in a row now, again.
Yeah, I was going to say for the second time. It's just nuts. I mean, it's crazy what he is. But it's impressive. It's incredible. And this underscores the fact that we've thought for a long time that he was a generational talent. He just needed to be in the right situation for that talent to really kind of manifest. And it is. But again, and I said this before, it's like in the grand scheme of things, though, what does this mean? Because the championship is going to be decided on a 750 track. And despite this amazing year, well, Kyle Larson has won just about everything there is to win. He's won his first NASCAR major and winning the Coca-Cola 600, won the All-Star race, won nine times, lap record, all of this stuff. And he still may not win the championship. Is that at the end of the year? What does that say? What does that mean? And I'm trying to process that myself and just kind of say, I guess this is the new NASCAR. We had this conversation a year ago. We've talked about it before with Kevin Harvick and other times. And it's just like, I don't know. Because in the grand scheme, it's like, it's great that he won again. And you would think any other year, like, wow, they've got this figured out. But the fact of the matter is the next 2 weeks, completely different.
Well, I mean, Kyle Larson's the driver of the year, whether he wins a championship or not. And that's what is going to be hard to reconcile. You know, he has double of the amount of wins than the next closest person at this point. More than double.
More than double. Yeah. Truex has got four.
Truex is four. So, you know, it's really, there's no question. You know, Denny Hamlin's given him a run for his money, sort of points wise overall for the season. But, you know, if you're going to say who's the best driver of the year, it's Kyle Larson. Now, again, he could go winless in the next two races and somebody else could get, as Chase Elliott did last year, get hot in those and win out. And that's it. I mean, you could even have somebody below the cut line, you know, the Ryan Blaney type guy or one of the Penske drivers or Truex, who's currently below the cut line. And all of a sudden, 2 weeks from now, we're saying, wow, Truex won the championship. And we're saying, oh, that's kind of weird. I mean, he wasn't necessarily the best driver of the year, but he was the best driver on these certain kind of tracks. And that's that narrative. But no matter what happens now, you know, I think Larson is the driver of the year. And it just becomes, okay, how much can you justify it with the playoffs or whatever happens? But you're right. I mean, it's 550s are done now. That is the end of this 550 package. Now, 550 horsepower races will return next year on these type of tracks. But this package, this current aero package that has been so maligned by so many fans, is done. And now it's down to the 750s. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, I'm even despite everything, I mean, I think, you know, you can't argue that this makes it unpredictable because, you know, I was just looking at the points, Jordan. Even for this round, let's say Kyle Larson was not locked in, okay? Like there was no lock in from his win. He would still be locked in going into Martinsville because he's over 74 points ahead of second place.
That's
right,
insane.
Now. I mean, not even the cutoff, but second place. He has over a full race on. I mean, it's just, he's doing everything you need to do. But again, like that, there's so much NASCAR's playoff format leaves stuff yet to be determined. And that's what makes it exciting. I mean, at the same time I say, well, geez, I mean, the playoff format's kind of weird. I'm like absolutely jacked up to go to Martinsville and see what happens. Yeah. I'm super excited to go to Phoenix and see how it plays out. You know what I mean? Like Martinsville next week. I mean, these guys who are below the cut line and now because so many guys had problems today, there's a close battle. Let's recap it real quick. Larson obviously locked in. Elliott's 34 up, but that's not safe at all. I mean, if Elliott gets spun in the first stage or something, he's out probably. Hamlin's 32 up. Kyle Busch, it looked like he hit the wall twice today and he was going to be totally screwed. Ends up finishing, where did he finish? He ends up finishing 28th, six laps down, and he's going to Martinsville above the cut line.
Yeah, because Ryan Blaney hit the wall there.
Blaney, he was plus 27 when he hit the wall. Now he is minus one. And hitting the wall wasn't his fault. I mean, he got wrecked by Dylan, obviously. Yeah. Truex minus three, a seventh place finish. We thought Truex was pretty much screwed after Texas, and now he's back in it. Keselowski minus six, Logano minus 26. So you have three spots open on points. You have quite a battle for any of those guys could win and launch over anybody else, you know, whether it's a Kyle Busch or a Hamlin, if he falls down. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen at Martinsville. And so I say that because I think that's compelling. That is compelling. I can't argue with that, but it doesn't, no matter what happens, Larson is the driver of the year, whether that comes with a trophy or not.
And it's something I've said before, but I almost feel like you almost need to recognize and like some kind of trophy you hand out at the end of the year. Like you award the champion the trophy, but then you have like a separate trophy for the driver of the year. Like a year ago, that would have been Kevin Harvick, right? This year it would be Larson. Maybe he takes them both, but it's almost, you need to acknowledge the fact of this greatness that is happening. Cause I feel like it's getting overlooked a little bit. If Larson doesn't win the championship this year, you almost wonder if people are going to almost forget about it to some degree. Like last year, Kevin Harvick had an incredibly dominant year, historically dominant in some respects. And now it was just like, because he didn't win the championship and he didn't make the final four. So I almost wonder if there's a way to honor that greatness.
Yeah. I mean, I think various, you know, media organizations have awards and things like that, but it's not the same, but NASCAR is not going to give out an award like that because they want they want to give credibility to the champion and the format. And so they're not going to say, okay, yeah, this was our champion, but we're also doing this. You know what I mean? Like they don't want to have any sort of mixed messages at all.
It would dilute the championship to some degree. Even, you know, you could argue whether that's already been diluted or not.
But, you know, obviously, like Larson is having an even more historic year than Harvick because of the laps led.
Yeah.
And he has as many wins as Harvick now. I mean, Jimmy Johnson, 07, was the last driver to get double-digit wins. And if Larson is going to win the championship at Phoenix, you're probably going to think he's going to have to get his 10th win there, unless something weird happens and a non-playoff guy wins it. But I mean, geez, it's just, it's quite a year that he's had in year one at Hendrick. I mean, now I say you shudder to think of what they could do together in year two, but everything's going to change next year with the next gen car anyway. So you have no idea. They could have a complete fall off like Harvick does. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, Hendrick really can't figure out the new car. And you know, it's so you got to appreciate this kind of season while it happens, I guess, because just like with Harvick, just like with others we've seen in the past, you think, wow, they've really got it going. And it's hard to sustain that kind of success in NASCAR, you know?
It is. And I think I think we should appreciate it for what it is, which is greatness coming to the forefront. And who knows what next year brings with the new car and everything. I think that's going to be a complete game changer. We'll see what the next 2 weeks are like. The nice thing for Kyle Larson is Martinsville is not his best track. I think he even says it's probably his worst track, and it doesn't matter what he does there because he's locked in. And then Phoenix, you know, you've got to think, and it's a different package and everything else, but it just doesn't feel like it really matters right now with this team.
So how are you looking at Martinsville? I mean,
as a street fight,
I really don't know what's, I mean, is it going to be a Gibbs show, or is Penske going to come back with something there? Where
I think if you're, let me look at this here really quick. If you're a Chase Elliott and a Denny Hamlin, I am going there. I am trying to stay out of everything. I am not pissing anyone off. I'm just trying to keep my nose clean. I just would like to score some stage points and hopefully
stage points huge for them.
It killed Blaney today.
Yeah, because he got zero stage points, and if he had gotten even one, he'd be above the cut line.
100%.
So, I mean, that just shows you how much they matter.
And so if I'm Elliott or Hamlin, I'm going there. I am just trying to score stage points. And if I can leave there probably with a top 15 finish, I am probably feeling really, really good and feel like I'm going to move on. And that is my goal. If I am anyone else, I am probably thinking I almost need to win or I need to finish as near the front as I can to move on. And Martinsville is a track, if you look at it, it's guys hit on things there. There's just like, we have, you know, a few years ago, it was like Keselowski felt like he couldn't lose there. Remember? There's that stretch. Now Martin Truex Jr. is in that stretch where it feels like he can't lose there. Well, he's in a situation where he's going to have to go there. He doesn't need to win, but he needs every single point he can get, and he's going to have to be a factor again. And Ryan Blaney's a guy who's really been on it lately there. He doesn't have a win. He's never won there before, but always leads a lot of laps, gets a lot of stage points. It's time for him to probably knock through that, and he's a guy who's going to have a clean day. But you look at a guy like Logano. He's won there too. I mean, so could he shake up the apple cart? That would be interesting. And if I'm looking at this day, if I'm Penske, I'm going, man, we got three guys below the cut line. It looked like Blaney was well on his way, and maybe we could sneak another one in there and Brad or Joey. And now it's like, okay, I think we're probably at best Penske's going to have won. This was a tough day for them, but I'm excited for what Martinsville is and what it represents. To me, is arguably it's in my top two or three races of the year, just because it's complete unknown. And it's like a backyard brawl, Royal Rumble-esque fight of just guys desperate to get their championship ticket punched.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny because as you're alluding to, I mean, Larson, not being a great track for him. Of course he could win because he's Larson, but
he finished fifth there in the spring, by the way.
You know, the other seven drivers, as I go down the list, Elliott, yeah, Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Blaney, Truex, Keselowski, Logano. I mean, you could easily see any of those seven winning. And I don't think that's been the case in the past where you go to Martinsville thinking, well, every single driver outside, you know, the bubble, they could, I could see them winning. But I mean, all these guys, you could make a great case for them, or at least a solid case for them. And so, yeah, that's so unpredictable. I have no idea what's going to happen. And they don't even have to win because there's three spots available on points. So you're going to have the potential winner to lock themselves in, plus two people scrapping for the final spot. You know, I do think that's a little bit interesting though, because, okay, so like, let's say Blaney hadn't had his problem, right? So he would have been plus 27. So you would have had sort of three drivers who were like all fairly sizable above the cut line. And they would have been looking at each other like, okay, I have to race this person really hard and stay ahead of this guy, because if there's a new winner from outside, they're going to knock one of us out. But now, with two of those being secure, sort of Elliott and Hamlin, that does change the calculus for them a little bit, because they can just, like you said earlier, okay, let's just have a solid day. And if there's a new winner, okay, maybe they'll knock Kyle Busch out, who's plus one or something or whatever it is. But as long as they stay clean and they have a decent gap, I don't think they have to worry about as much, because they're not going to get outpointed by like 30 something back, unless, you know, at least on a normal day. So yeah. That's very interesting. I mean, the battle, it's going to come down to the last lap of like, we're going to be looking at the number of points, and it's going to be like, oh, like that, you know,
here, yeah.
Yep. That's going to be really, really interesting. I honestly can't wait for that. It's going to be fascinating to watch. So
I agree. Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see. And going back to Hamlin or Elliott, if they're leading late, and depending upon who's behind them, there's a part of me that says, if I got a guy behind me who absolutely needs to win and is going to have to, you know, win this race at all costs, I'm almost partial, if I was one of those guys, to say, I'm almost going to move out of the way, because I don't even want them to have be inclined to put a bumper on me and spin me out and wreck me. And then all of a sudden my points day is shot. Like, you know, you almost have to be, if you're Elliott or Hamlin, I am super defensive, almost to a fault.
That's a good point. I mean, even if somebody's trying to do a bump and run on you or something for the win, and then they accidentally spin you out, and then all of a sudden you can't, you know, you're one turn away from the finish and you're wrecked and you lose all your points. I mean, it's a weird way to have to think about, okay, yeah, like, let's give this up. But I mean, depending on who's behind you,
I'm not fighting too hard. Let's put it that. I mean, there's this case where I'm like, you know what? If they get close to me and they kind of start to lay it to me a little bit, I just might. It's defensive driving. You really have to think about it, because
I mean, like, if you see Joey Logano in your rearview mirror, or something, and you know,
like, you know what? Hey, Joey, why don't you just go right by here, buddy? Cool. I'm just going to finish second.
And you would hate to see it decided that way, but I mean, it's you're right. I mean, you have to think about the big picture in a way, but. Oh, man.
Because we saw with Hamlin, it goes back to 2017 when, you know, Denny Hamlin said, I just tried to move Chase. I didn't want to wreck him, but he hit him wrong. And next thing you know, Chase's car is all wadded up. And that's a lot of points.
Yeah. Well, you still have people disagreeing with that. I did buy Denny's story at the time, and I still get people mad at me for that. So, whatever. So Jordan, it's time for the Was It a Good Race poll. And I am one win away from clinching the title. I might not even need another win because I've got such an advantage in the tiebreaker right now. But unfortunately for you, you're down 5-2 in these playoffs here. I know you don't care, but
no, I'm just going for the poll guesser of the year award. I don't really care about the championship.
Oh, okay. Good move. Good move. Okay. So what is your poll guess for Kansas, Mr. Poll Guesser of the Year?
What was the Kansas result earlier this year?
Okay. What was the Kansas result earlier this year? I see you're trying to do some research here. I will give you this information.
I like your t-shirt, by the way, Portland Timbers.
Uh-huh. That's nice. Right. So Kansas Spring, which was won by Kyle Busch, was a 57.3. Honestly, I don't really even remember what happened in that race. So
Kyle Larson dominated. Then he and Blaney got jumbled on a restart late. Kyle Busch had a fast car, got a good restart, won the race.
Oh, that's right. Okay. That is familiar now. But see, you have such a good memory about these things. The top Kansas race ever in the poll was 2019. Keselowski, Kansas won. That was 89.6. Hmm. And that was when this package was taken off and people gave it good reviews at the time. Anyway, more recent ones, you've got a 70.3 last year.
All right.
Yeah. It's not great races, 50, 50, 40. So what are you going to say here?
I'm going to say 55. It seemed like from what little I watch and just from the conversations I had with different people who did watch it, seemed like a very typical Kansas race, very familiar winner. Wasn't a race that really is going to be something we honestly remember too much down the road. Just give me 55%.
So Texas last week was a 45.8. And I just feel like surely this was better than that, right? I mean, I know it wasn't the most exciting race.
A little bar, but yeah.
I mean, surely it was better. So yeah, I'm going to say 55 is pretty decent, but I'll just say 52. Is that okay. Fair?
That's sounds right.
Yeah, I'll say 52. I think it's going to be somewhere around 50 probably. And as has been so many times the case with this package, it's, I have 50% of the people and they go, I can't believe, like in my replies after the day of the poll, they're like, I can't believe these people thought it was a good race. How can anybody think that? And then you have 50% of the other people going, I can't believe anybody would not think that's a good race. What are you looking for? If otherwise or whatever. So of course the split NASCAR fan base as this package is created. But anyway, that's probably reality. But guess what, Jordan? We'll be back together doing this in person for the next 2 weeks.
Yay!
So no more remote podcasts, post-race podcasts for the rest of the season. So hooray for that.
Can't wait to see you, buddy.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun. Everybody, we appreciate you listening. And of course, if you want to subscribe to The Athletic to check out all our work, including Jordan's F1 stories from the track this weekend, with all the solid coverage that he did down there covering every angle, you can go to theathletic.com/theteardown and you will be prompted for the latest deal. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you next time on The Teardown.